What is up, ladies and gentlemen? We are back once again with another episode of Pucking Around here on the Review and Preview Sports Network. As always, I'm your host, Noah Dog Diver, representing the Pittsburgh Penguins. And as always, joined by my co-host and good buddy, Brady Campbell, representing his poor New York Islanders. How are you doing? How are you doing lately, my friend? You got the new coach? Is it yeah. Sunny Pastures, or is it more of the same?
So far, I mean, it's only been a few games, obviously, and who knows, maybe this week off will change things. We got the new assistant coach today that coached with Patrick Waugh back on his previous team. But the first few games haven't really shown too much. I feel like the first game or two, the team at least kind of responded and went out there and played a full 60-minute effort, even though I think it was the second one, they still fell a little short. But that first one against Dallas was a tough game, and they got the overtime victory. Still, they could be right in the playoff mix if they didn't have some of these losses. And you look at, like, the Montreal game, just an awful first period, and just a few awful turns. If they could clean up the turnovers, they probably would be closer to the playoffs, but we'll get to that, I guess, in a little bit when we talk about the transactions a little bit more and all that. But hopefully this All-Star break gets them going a little bit.
Yeah, man, we got a lot to get into. It looked like it was just going to be a fairly normal show. But then today, I don't know what the NHL decided to do. They just decided to break all their news today. And, like, it wasn't like minor news. It was, like, multiple major stories coming out, like, back-to-back-to-back pretty much. So we got a lot to talk about tonight, so we're probably going to have to kind of go a little bit rapid fire because, you know, I don't want the show to be 3 hours long. So, you know, let's just go, like, before we get into it, if you guys are watching yet, not yet, make sure to leave a like and comment on the show. Help spread the show through the Facebook algorithm. But we're just getting right into it, man. We're going to start with the Oilers. These guys have been absolutely ridiculous lately. So here's an interesting thing with these guys, Brady. You know, they come into the season with Jay Woodcroft as their head coach. That, you know, he starts out 3-9-1. He gets fired. So they bring in this Chris Knobloch guy. Now, I remember Knobloch, he was really linked heavily to the Rangers job, you know, before, obviously, that did not work out. And now he's the Oilers coach. And since he's come in, Brady, get this, you know, they won 16 straight, you know, and all of that. They've surged up. But they were like fifth or sixth in the Pacific. I mean, they're one of the biggest jokes in the league. We talked about them about a month and a half ago. And now they're third in the Pacific. They've leapfrogged the Kings, who we're going to talk about a little bit later, just fired their coach today. But with Chris Knobloch, Brady, 26-6-0 record. Just absolutely incredible. And, you know, the thing that really surprised me about the most, I mean, obviously they got the offensive talent. Everyone's going to mention that. Second best in goals against this season. Penalty kill, 83%. And obviously their power play, I mean, 27%. Their 5-on-5 is great as well. McDavid and Draisaitl kind of doing the thing. How about Zach Hyman? Point per game, he's got 30 goals this season. I mean, I don't think many people already in preseason would have had Zach Hyman pegged as a potential 50-goal scorer. But it looks like that's a very real possibility. Nugent Hopkins and Bouchard as well, you know, doing a great job. But in net, you know, I've actually been really impressed with the tandem of Skinner and Pickard. I think they've looked really good lately. And it's just like, I don't know what happened. It's just like they flipped a switch. Maybe that, you know, the new coach or whatever lit a fire under them. But they went from looking like, you know, the biggest disappointment in the league to obviously they're by far the hottest team in the league right now. So what have been your thoughts with this kind of Oilers turnaround we've seen? I mean, it's been pretty ridiculous lately.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not the most surprising thing in an 82-game season that a team with that much talent – finds their footing a little bit, but to this extent is pretty crazy. They're, of course, pushing an NHL record here now. Their last loss, ironically, came to Lane Lambert. Just thought I'd throw that in there as well. But they've been playing some phenomenal hockey as of late. Of course, there was a bit of a struggle early on with Jay Woodcroft, and it was a little bit surprising, but on this win streak, really the issues that have haunted them in the past, the goaltending, to some extent the defense, have played really a huge role in it. As you mentioned, Skinner and Pickard have been really kind of carrying their weight as of late. Zach Hyman, I mean, maybe not as surprising when you think of some of the talent around him, but still, he's had a heck of a season so far. It's still a bit of a surprise. And McDavid and Draisaitl, I guess for their standards, struggling early on the season, but they've hit their stride well now for the last few months and on the streak have been incredible. And during the streak, they've only allowed two or fewer goals in 14 consecutive games now, which is, of course, a franchise record. In their past 27, they're 24-3-0. So it hasn't just been this win streak. It's really been the last kind of month to month and a half, almost pushing 2 months now, where they've been playing some dominant hockey. And of course, we'll get to the Kings in a little bit, but the team's just going in really complete opposite directions right now. And they're not far off, really that all far off, I guess, from the Golden Knights, who are 5 points up on them. But at the pace the Oilers are playing, the Golden Knights better watch their back right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned those standings, just because I got them up here. And like you said, the Knights are in second, the Oilers in third, but the Oilers have multiple games in hand. I think they're 5 points behind, but if they go on a good run, you know, like you said, they could be up there in second. Obviously, I mean, the Canucks are still incredible. The Canucks have, and they just made a big move as well that we're going to talk about a little bit later, but they're up there in 71, 12 points ahead of the Oilers, 7 ahead of the Knights. They've been phenomenal, definitely the biggest surprise of the season, in my opinion. But I agree. I think that the turnaround has been remarkable. I mean, like you said, like, you know, a down year for McDavid and Draisaitl. Draisaitl is still probably going to get 110 points, 45, 50 goals. McDavid's on pace for 130 points, which, you know, is incredible. It's just, you know, the fact he scored about 380 points last season, it kind of feels like, especially with the incredible seasons that MacKinnon and Kucherov have had, man. I mean, they just keep going back and forth. Looks like, oh, one guy might be edging away. Nope, it's right dead even again. You know, it's kind of weird to say those guys have been flying under the radar a bit, but, you know, I do think they were early in the season. Now the team's winning. Obviously, I think they're getting more of that recognition. I know I saw Team McDavid drafting for the All-Star game earlier today, but, man, I mean, you can never kind of, you know, a hot team. It's always tough to completely buy into the Oilers for me, because, you know, there's always those playoff concerns, kind of like with a team like the Leafs. But, you know, the way they're playing, I mean, if they keep this, obviously they're not going to win 50 straight games, but if they keep playing this type of consistent hockey the rest of the season, you know, I think they'll have probably a favorable first round matchup if they can get second in the Pacific, maybe get home ice. I mean, a team like Vegas would be very tough, but, you know, there's still a lot to be determined. I don't think they can catch the Canucks. I think Canucks have been really consistent all season. I think if the Oilers are firing in all cylinders, I'd probably think they're a better team than the Canucks, but, you know, it's just, can they put it all together like they have, you know, the last month pretty much in the playoffs? That remains to be seen, but I mean, these guys have just been absolutely ridiculous. And like you said, it's been built around really good defensive play and really good goaltending play, which isn't really what you associate with this team. So, you know, we'll see what they keep doing. You know, maybe they make some moves around the deadline. Not, you know, haven't really looked too much in their cap situation. But, I mean, the way it's looking, if they stay with the core they got right now, they're going to be just fine heading the playoffs. It's just, what can they do once they get there? Tom Scavetta says, hello to an old boy and a new boy. What's up, Tom? Resident Rangers fan. They've been on a little bit of a mediocre run, but they're still first in division because they had an incredible start.
Yep.
Here you go, Brady. James, resident Islanders fan, asks you, do the Islanders make the playoffs?
Yeah, I try to be really optimistic with my teams. And one thing the Islanders have showed us in years past is that while they may not be the most talented team, they could always kind of surprise people. But I believe it's 6 points now behind Detroit for that second wild. That's kind of annoying too, with Toronto, Detroit, and Tampa like all fighting kind of for that last, like, of the top three spots in the Atlantic. So there's always kind of three teams now that you're battling with. Realistically, I'm gonna say probably not, but I mean, if the Islanders could get on a bit of a roll, that I'm not saying anything like what the Oilers are doing, but, you know, maybe like a, you know, 5 to 10 game win streak. Of course, they're going to need a bit of help as well, which it's going to be tough to come by in this conference, really. So I don't think so. I think they could at least, you know, make things a bit closer once again, but I don't know. We'll see. I got to wait to see after the All-Star break with this new assistant coach they brought in too with Wa. Apparently he's a very good defensive coach. So I'm hoping that can sort some of their issues out, but I don't think it was just the coaching, which we'll get into. I think, you know, they could be a bit outmatched talent wise by some of the top teams too.
Yeah, James, stay tuned. In about 30 minutes, we're going to be talking about the recent head coaching change you guys made and, you know, how we think that might affect you guys. Oil change needed for the Oilers. Nah, man, they're doing just fine right now. They need to keep it running as it is right now. Fonz DeFalco says, coming at you from YouTube, what's good, fellas? Go Rangers. What's up, Fonz? Can't wait to see your punishment video on the Mets whenever that comes out. Looking forward to that one, man. In jersey news, the Stadium Series jerseys are all nice. Rangers are my favorites. Devils are underrated. But the Islanders ones are bland, and the Sharks' new alternates are fire. Yeah, Brady, you know, I don't want to keep dumping the Islanders, but I saw those jerseys, and I'm like, my God, these are some of the ugliest jerseys I've ever seen in my life. I don't know if you had any thoughts on those.
Yeah, so I don't really like them. They kind of look like the Oilers alternates. They look like those old Predators, like I think it was Steam Series, maybe Winter Classic jerseys, just orange instead of yellow. Now, as a jersey fanatic and a huge Islander fan, did that stop me from buying one? No. I'm going to the game too, so I already purchased my Bo Horvat jersey. They did say that one would come in time for the game. We'll see. I mean, they're not like the worst jerseys I've ever seen, but they're very blunt. Even like the aisles across the front, if they even just put like, I think the Lighthouse logo would have been really cool, or even just like more of a logo than just aisles. I think that honestly could have made it so much better. But the jersey overall is a bit bland. Although I do agree with the Sharks alternates are great.
Yep.
The other Steam Series jerseys, I don't know if there was any that were like amazing, but I think the Rangers, I don't really like much about the Rangers, but I do think those jerseys were pretty cool. The Devils and the Flyers, while I get their whole tradition thing, every new jersey of theirs just looks the same every time. And
yeah.
The Devils, I don't know, like the red and black, I feel like they could have done a little bit more. It's kind of just like a very monotone, like just those two colors again, but I thought they were okay.
Getting to it, you know what, brother? I always gotta troll you about the Mets. Brady, aren't you a Mets fan too?
Unfortunately.
Oh my God, man, it's just rough for you lately. But you know, it is what it is. You're born into it, and unfortunately, you got to live with it, I guess. But you know what? Speaking of hot teams, you know, this was actually one of the first teams I was thinking of talking about. I was like, well, we obviously got to talk about the Oilers first, but the Lightning had that really mediocre start this season. But, you know, lately they've been getting it going. I think they're 8-2-0 in their last 10 games. And they're third in the Atlantic, but, you know, and I'm glad you mentioned this earlier, Brady, they're not comfortably in third because the Leafs, who obviously were higher up early in the season, have still been doing pretty good. It's just the Lightning have been on a great run. And the Red Wings, I think, have been a really surprising team. They have 58 points there. If we look at the standings real quick, currently, like I said, Tampa's in third, but they have 59 points. Toronto and Detroit both have 58. And one big thing for these teams, I believe they both have multiple games in hand on the Lightning. The Lightning have played around 50 games, I want to say. I don't have the exact number up real quick, but
Lightning have played 50.
Mm-hmm.
Detroit's also now played 50. The Leafs are at 47.
Gotcha. That was it. Yeah, the Maple Leafs have three in hand. So that could play a big factor as well. Tampa, I think, is a team. I don't know if you agree with this, Brady. I think they still have the talent. I think their window is closing, though, because I think eventually, you know, the contract situation is going to catch up with them. But, I mean, Kucherov's been arguably the best player in the league this season. You know, Point, Hedman, and Stamkos are still kind of there doing their things in the background. I mean, you know, Kucherov's been their number one. They're still doing their stuff. I like Brandon Hagel. I think they have some good depth guys, but and obviously Vasilevsky and Ned is remarkable. He hasn't been good this season, though, funny enough. 899 save percentage, 2.85 goals against average. They've actually struggled on the defensive end, 23rd in goals against. Their fifth in goals for, their PK and power play both look excellent, though. 30% power play, 81% penalty kill. So it seems like, you know, most of their defensive struggles are at 5-on-5. But, you know, they've been on a good run lately. You know, I have to hear my boy Garth texting me every day about, oh, my God, the Lightning just won another game. And they have been doing good lately. But, you know, that Atlantic is tough. And like you were just talking about, you know, the odds of the Islanders making the playoffs, Eastern Conference, it's really tough this season. I mean, that wild card is going to be very competitive. You got the Leafs and the Wings in the Atlantic, and then over in the Metro, you got teams like, you know, the Penguins, you know, are kind of in there, the Capitals as well. You know, multiple teams, you know, vying for the Devils. I mean, I think the Devils stink, but, you know, they've been on a little bit better of a run lately, considering how terrible they started. The Flyers have lost 5 in a row, which I love to see as well. So, you know, there's a lot of teams in contention, Brady. 3rd through 7th in the Metro, separated by only 5 points, which is pretty insane to think about. So what have been your takeaways from the Lightning lately? And obviously, you know, playoff chances in this really tough Eastern Conference.
To be honest, the Lightning, I haven't paid, like, the most attention to them, I guess just because – for the first time in a few years, they've still been good, obviously, but they're maybe not one of those top teams in the division, maybe not top two and like borderline top three. But of course, Nikita Kucherov having a ridiculous season, and with Vasilevsky being out, you know, him and Stamkos and Point and those guys kind of like kept them afloat, I guess. And with Vasilevsky coming back now, of course, he hasn't been perfect, but they start to hit their stride a little bit here. Just 1 point ahead of Toronto and Detroit, though. So they really can't avoid to fall. None of these teams really can. I mean, they've made a little bit of cushion for at least a playoff spot right now, mm-hmm. with the Islanders. All those kind of middle-of-the-pack Metro teams have struggled maybe a little bit compared to those teams, at least as of late. But knowing these teams – they definitely are going for that top spot in or the third spot in the division, at, you know, as close as they can to that top of the division. And the Lightning now on that 8-2 run have got themselves there. The only problem is, as good as that run has been, of course, they're right in the mix of things, and Nikita Kucherov and those guys can only really carry the team for so long. The bottom six guys, I guess, you know, no disrespect, but they're bottom six for a reason. But if they can, you know, pick up their game a little bit to match, you know, to some extent what the top guys are doing, I think they could, you know, get into the playoffs and maybe make a little noise this time as almost like a dark horse team, I guess, since they've, you know, slightly have fallen off a bit from their cup run years. But yeah, the Lightning are kind of a tough team to judge. Really, the whole middle Atlantic, I feel like, is a bit tough to judge right now in that division because everyone's so tight and they played a little bit back and forth. You know, one team is a little bit of a hot stretch and the other, and they kind of are trading blows almost. But if the Lightning keep that up now, I think they have the pieces to get to the playoffs in a pretty good spot and be a dangerous team once they get there.
Tom says Vasilevsky's still the number one goalie. Well, I'm never going to count. I mean, I know he said offseason. I'm never going to count that guy out when it comes to playoffs. I mean, even if they sneak in as a wild card, I definitely think he just instantly flipped that switch and start playing like, you know, the Vasi of old at any point. Fawn says, I don't know if you guys have talked about this, but you can answer whenever. What's your thoughts on the All-Star jerseys? I feel like I'm one of the few that actually likes them. I'm not sure how Brady feels about them. In my opinion, I think the primary colors are good. Like, I think the blue and red ones look good. I think there was a white one as well, and I want to say a black one. I think they all
– it's black or yellow or something.
It might have been yellow. I don't mind the primary colors fonts. The only thing I don't really like about them, I don't like the gold logo. I think gold on, like, blue and red, I think it looks a little weird in my opinion. Yellow, thank you for that, Fonz. But, yeah, I mean, I guess they're okay. Like, I don't hate them, but I just think the logo color, I think it's a little strange of a combination, in my opinion. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Brady, or not, but
Yeah, I thought the yellow one was kind of odd. Other than that, I thought the others were okay. My main issue with the jerseys, it just feels out of place. The nameplates, they're on the bottom, which is okay, but they're like lowercase. I don't know. That part annoyed me a little bit. But overall, like I like the jersey idea with the colors and like the logo and everything. I thought was pretty cool. By the way, it looks like McDavid just won fastest skater, I believe, just edging out Barzal. Mm. Not too surprising that those two guys were the top two there, but
yeah.
For the jerseys, I think I agree with you for the most part. I mean, just kind of those like nitpicky things that I change about them, but I feel like every jersey kind of comes with that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it doesn't really matter. I'll tell you one thing I really love, though, that I know the NFL used to do with helmets. I think the MLB and NBA used to do it. When players would actually wear their normal jerseys at the All-Star game, I think stuff like that is so sick. I mean, if the NHL did stuff like that, because there's some beautiful jerseys out there, man, I think that'd be a really good idea. All-Star jerseys are usually a little out there. NBA does that, too. That is true. They always, you know, try to make it a little extravagant. Now, transaction report. We got a lot to talk about. I didn't think we'd have this much to talk about. We got what is this? Like seven things to talk about pretty much. So we got to pretty much, you know, just blitz through this stuff. We'll start with this one. Now we already kind of touched on this a little earlier. Now, you know, before we get into it, I just want to say I apologize to Lane Lambert. Me and Brady did discuss him on our last show. And then literally like a day or two later, this poor guy got canned. I think we jinxed him pretty much because he got fired. He got kicked to the curb, and they replaced him with Patrick Waugh. Now, you know, I'll let you do most talk on this one, Brady, but, you know, just real quick thoughts on me. I think Patrick Waugh is a pretty good coach. You know, he had that stint with the Avalanche a few years back where he was with them for three seasons, and they were pretty good, but then he resigned. Jared Bednar comes in, and obviously that's worked out great for him since, won the Stanley Cup with him. But where I really think he's had some good success, he has been with the Quebec Ramparts and the QMJHL for, I don't even know how many, probably like 15 combined seasons. He was with them originally. He left to go to the NHL, and they actually went back. He's been incredible there. I think he's a really good coach. I don't know if he can help save the Islanders. You know, I'll let you kind of talk on that. But I do think he's a good coach. You know, he's got a lot of experience. Obviously got the pedigree both as a player and as a coach, in my opinion. I don't know, though. I think, in my opinion, I think Patrick Waugh is kind of a guy that you bring in if your team is already good, not a guy that can necessarily is just going to turn the team around on a dime. You know, when he took over that Avalanche team, I think they already had a good amount of talent. I think they had already drafted McKinnon. Obviously, they had Landeskog, guys like that as well. So I'm not sure if it's a good fit. I mean, you know, what have you seen? Obviously, you know, it's very short sample size. I think the Islanders have continued to struggle with him as head coach. But, you know, I guess kind of, you know, your outlook for the future with this guy and obviously thoughts on, you know, them letting Lambert go.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been the same thing so far, unfortunately. You know, win a game, lose a few, get a point, and then kind of fall apart in overtime. Although I think that last game against Florida in overtime, we were like tied for the most overtime wins somehow after like not winning like our first five, but we have the most OT losses. But yeah, I think it was time, honestly, for Lane Lambert. Like, obviously I'm not in the room, but he doesn't come. Everything was kind of, I don't want to say falling apart. That might be a little too dramatic, but they were heading in the wrong direction, and he just comes across as like way too calm, like because they were still in like the mix, still kind of are for the playoffs, and he just didn't, not that he didn't care, but like he didn't really seem like he was all that, you know, content, or he was content with, you know, just kind of keeping everything, not really trying to get the team fired up or doing any, you know, major changes, and some of his lineups were very questionable. I hate to say I wasn't like happy he was gone, but I do think it was the right move. And Patrick Waugh, I mean, when I saw that name, I had to do a double take because I'm like the Patrick Waugh, but yeah, obviously I don't know if his goaltending quite translates to the coaching exactly, but He's had some success, you know, with the Avs, kind of helped to turn them around a little bit when he was there, kind of left right before they took off. And of course it's not the NHL, but with the Ramparts, he's had plenty of success there. He's taking over a kind of a mid team, as the kids say, in the middle of the season. So, you know, the results might not quite get there right away, but especially the first few games, the team responded well. They definitely played a lot harder. I guess only time will tell, really. But I also think it's a talent issue. Obviously, they're not one of the top teams in the league. And, you know, the top teams in the league have a ton of talent. They got some talented guys, of course. But, yeah, definitely lacking a bit there. And those guys that, you know, are borderline, you know, can get benched some games and not start. They're, I don't know, they made some questionable moves. Julien Gauthier was put on waivers. Obviously not like a star player or anything like that, but I like this game. He has speed and all that. And guys like Wahlstrom, who just game in and game out, the more he plays, just looks like he's not going to quite pan out with us more and more. Pierre Engvall, I get he's a pretty fast guy and he's pretty tall and has a decent shot and all that, but I hate to say, he almost looks like lazy out there sometimes, or that he doesn't know what he's doing. And this team, I will say, there's a few games, especially in the Wah era now, these last few games, where they could have won if they just – I've never seen a team, and this is the last few seasons, just have some of the worst, like, clearing attempts and have some of the worst – like, it's such – like, just chip it out. Make a quick change or something, reset, and they just like give it to the defenseman at the point, and then of course it ends up in the back of the net. So that's honestly the main. Like if they fix that issue, they could be right back in this playoff race. But overall, I guess I like the move, but will it? You know, of course it probably won't automatically, you know, right away turn things around. But the team gets a little bit of time off here. Get to adjust to the coach a little bit. They bring in, like I said, this new assistant who I guess was with Wah on the Ramparts. He's a good defensive coach, so hopefully he can help with that as well. But so far, the first few games didn't really change much, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I guess here's a positive for you. The Metro has been so up and down this season that somehow you guys are still fourth in the division, but you're 6 points out of wild card spot, which obviously isn't good. I tell you what, this Metro division is playing on emotions, man. We were up to like fourth at one point, and then like the next day we were seventh again. I'm like, this is freaking ridiculous. And now the Flyers are falling down as well. So it's probably gonna. Who, bro? Honestly, whoever that third division spot is probably gonna be a team's best chance to make the playoffs. It's probably gonna be somehow easier. They get one of those wild card spots because the Atlantic has been really good. Up and down division, you know, unfortunately, I do think the Islanders have been – first of all, the record in overtime is just terrific. I mean, I don't know what the hell's going on there. They could have so many more points and a way better record if they could win in overtime. But I guess it's just like once they finish the 60 minutes, they just decide, yeah, you know, that's it. We're wrapping up. We're going home and, you know, end the game as soon as possible. They just take L after L. I do think Wah, like I said, I do think he's a good coach. I don't know if it's going to work out with the Islanders. I mean, they just have their drafting record. You know, you mentioned Wahlstrom. When they drafted Wahlstrom, I was like, that's a really good pick for them. Like, my God. And like you said, it doesn't look like it's panned out. They traded away Ratu, who I thought was another really good pick for him, you know, in the Bo Horvat trade. I don't know, man. I think it's I think just, you know, get used to the midness pretty much. I don't think it's going to change anytime
soon. I've been used to that for a while now.
Bro, hey, man. Look, you're president of hockey operations. You know, he had a success back in the day with the Devils, but he's about 99 years old at this point. Like, you know, it is what it is pretty much. We got a couple of quick signings. We're going to go through some veterans getting new teams. I got to tell you, man. This guy, Corey Perry, is the luckiest guy on planet Earth right now because this poor guy, he was stuck, you know, wasting away at the Blackhawks. He had 16 games played for him this season, 9 points. He got bought out I want to say on the 26th, but, you know, just recently, past week, week and a half or so. And then, like, a day later, he signed with the Edmonton Oilers on a one-year, $1.1 million contract, who we obviously just mentioned that had been red hot lately. Now, you know, this is a guy that's had an esteemed career. He's got, you know, he's the Hart Trophy winner back in 2010-11. You know, he's been around the league, you know, the past couple of years with some teams that, you know, made some deep cup runs, but unfortunately for him, he was on the losing end pretty much every time. First it was the Canadiens. No, first it was the Stars, then it was the Canadiens, then it was the Lightning. So three straight years he was on the team that lost the Stanley Cup Finals. He did win it all the way back in 2007, I believe, with the Ducks. You know, this guy, I mean, I think he's had a very good career. Obviously, he's kind of a bit of shithead, which I think everyone knows. I think he's a guy that you probably really like if he's on your team. But if he's on another team, you just hate his guts. But I will say this, as a bottom six guy, probably a fourth liner, I think he could be really helpful for a playoff run. I mean, obviously, I think he's proven that the last couple of years with the teams he's been on. I think he's glad to get out of Chicago because, man, that team was already bad. Then they lost Bedard. I mean, they're basically the Detroit Pistons of the NHL at this point. It's just really bad for him. But, you know, I think for a nice, cheap depth signing, I think it's a pretty solid move. Do you have any thoughts on this signing for the Oilers, Brady?
I think it's a pretty good signing, too. I feel like, of course, they're going for it right now. They're on the roll, and I think this signing works out well. I think, like you said, they could plug him into probably one of the bottom six areas, and he could do his job. As you said, he's probably not fun to play against. I'm sure a lot of guys around the league might not like to play against him, but because he's very scrappy, and he's a bit older now, but he still kind of has that goal scorer's touch to some extent. At least he can make some plays here and there. So I think it's great for a team that might have been lacking slightly in the bottom six to bring in a veteran like that. Although, of course, he is a little bit older. And of course, good for him as well. Finally got off that Blackhawks team, which was interesting. It was kind of a surprising move, and fans thought they knew the reason why, which we won't get into. Yeah, good for him to get off that team. And now that you gotta feel bad, I guess, to some extent. I know a lot of people don't like the Blackhawks, but their fan base, I mean, of course, they had those great cup years about a decade ago, but they're really going through it right now without Bedard. But overall, I think this is great for both parties, that signing, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, silver lining for the Blackhawks fans, you know, at some point to get Bedard back, and they're probably going to have another number one pick with the way they're going, unless they lose the lottery. So, I mean, you know, you see the Sharks are right there with them as well. So, I mean, you never know. But, a good signing for the Oilers, in my opinion. Tom says Perry is also an old boy. That he is. And speaking of old boys, we've got another one. Now, you know, this guy, man, he's just been wasting away on the Islanders the past couple seasons, you know, looking for a new team. He didn't sign with anyone in the summer. But Zach Parise, who's 39 years old, these are two very old boys, signs with a one-year $825K contract with the Colorado Avalanche. So both of these guys, you know, go into contending teams potentially. Zach Parise, you know, started with the Devils, then he went to the Wild with the Ryan Suter on those insane contracts. He's been the Islanders the last two seasons. 400 career goals. I think he was in the 420s, if I remember right. 879 career points and 1,224 games played. But like I said, he has not played all season because he was a free agent and the Avs kind of picked him up. Now, you know, once again, I think it's pretty steady. I think this is a solid depth signing. Another guy, I mean, he still has some goal scoring touch. I mean, he did score 21 goals for the Islanders last season, age 38 season. So, you know, I think he can still do a little bit of something, but, you know, probably another guy that is either going to be scratched or he's going to be playing on the fourth line pretty much. But I mean, for a team that wants to contend like the Avs are, I think it's another really good depth signing, a guy that knows how to play. He's been around the league a very long time. You know, very low risk, obviously 1 year cheap contract. I think it's another good move. I mean, it's not, you know, one of those, breaking news kind of deals, like jaw dropping things. But I think it's another one of those kind of savvy signings that you might not take notice of it now, but maybe if this team makes, you know, a deep playoff run, he could probably make a difference at some point.
Absolutely. Zach Parise, honestly, one of the fan favorites in his short time here. He's probably one of my favorite players on the team, because whereas some players, you see them kind of just lugging around slowly. Like, he's not the fastest guy, and he's a bit up there in age, but he gave 100% plus in basically every shift. And like you said, he's, of course, getting a bit older, but he still has some goal-scoring touch. He still has some playmaking ability. I was a bit upset to see him go. I mean, obviously, he hasn't been playing with us since last season, but good for him getting a spot with the Avalanche. And very similar to Perry, I think he could kind of fit in probably bottom six and fit in well with a team that's already filled out pretty nicely and is primed to go on another playoff run. I remember Matt Barzal said if the Islanders had won even like, you know, 10 more games approximately, or were playing a little bit better hockey, you think Zach would have come back here. And maybe that's the case. Of course, there could be other factors as well. They brought back the quote from, I think, the end of last season. It almost gave off Tavares vibes, where Zach said he couldn't see himself playing anywhere else. So that was definitely tough to see. But I think, once again, it's a great move for both parties, and I wish him all the best. And I think he'll fit in great in Colorado.
We've got a couple trades to talk about as well. One that just happened today, but we'll start with this one, which happened, I think it was either yesterday or the day before. A trade between two Pacific Division teams. The Flames clearly selling, the Canucks are clearly buying, because they traded for Elias Lindholm from the Calgary Flames, former, I believe, number 5 overall pick of the Carolina Hurricanes. In return, they traded away Andre Kuzmenko, who had an absolute breakout form, had 74 points in 81 games last season. They also traded away two defensive prospects, a 2024 first and a conditional third-round pick in 2024, or just a normal fourth-round pick in 2024. Some quick thoughts on this trade. I think Calgary is selling because they've just really not had a good season. They are currently 6th in the Pacific Division, 7 points behind the Kings in fourth. I think they've just really not had a good season at all. I think their offense and defense has been very mediocre. No disrespect to Blake Coleman. I think he's a solid, you know, third line type of guy. But when Blake Coleman's your leading scorer on the team, I think there's a bit of a problem in your offense. They're really missing Gaudreau and Tkachuk, in my opinion. I still don't understand why they trade away Tkachuk. I love Huberdeau, but, you know, there's no way to mince words for it. I think he's been a bit of a disaster with the Flames. It just has not worked out at all. I think Markstrom's actually been okay. I think he's probably been their best player, but everyone else, I think, has just been really struggling. On the other side for the Canucks, you know, they trade away Kuzmenko. Like I said, only just got there last season, you know, for a guy that's very experienced, been around a very long time. Elias Lindholm, you know, he's a pretty solid player. Career high, I think, is around 82 points. So as best, he's a point-per-game player. This season, I think he has around, I want to say, 32 points in 49 games played, which, you know, I mean, I guess for, you know, how bad the Flames have been, he's been a pretty decent season for him. But, you know, at his best, I think this is a guy that could score, you know, mid-60s, low-70s points. I don't know if he'll ever hit that career high again. I think that Flames team that year was just firing on all cylinders. But I do think he's a pretty good player. However, if I had to pick a winner for this trade, I really think the Flames got a lot back for Lindholm. I think Kuzmenko is a solid player. He doesn't have the flashy stats this season. Actually, fun fact, Brady, I don't know if you saw this. Reby and Preby, I know, posted it, but with this trade, the Canucks now have 6 All-Star representatives, which is the most for an NHL team since 1998, which is pretty crazy stat to think about. But I do think the Flames probably won this trade just because, you know, I think Kuzmenko's a good player. They got back some prospects. And, you know, while that 2024 first is obviously going to be low because then the Canucks will be a pretty good playoff team, might make a decent run. You know, it's still late round, first-round pick. You can still get plenty of good prospects late in the first round. You know, maybe that conditional pick, maybe they can get something there as well. I think the trade makes sense for both sides. I think, you know, Canucks are looking to upgrade from Kuzmenko. And the Flames, you know, got a decent bit back. So what were your thoughts when you saw this trade?
Yeah, this was definitely an interesting one, considering it's one guy for a whole package of everything. Mm-hmm. I think you really said it best with Lindholm. He's a pretty good player, and he could definitely provide a good amount for the Canucks. Was he worth all of that? I don't quite know. I know Canucks fans, I feel like at least the ones I saw on social media and all that, weren't too happy with the trade, especially after the Horvat one, which I guess we won. I don't know, but like Beauvillier and Ratu aren't really with them and all that. But this one was interesting. I'd probably give the edge if I had to, because everyone's like, oh, who won this trade? I'd probably give the edge to the Flames getting all that for Lindholm. Kuzmenko's was a great player, really, with the Canucks. I feel like he was a little bit underrated with them. Not like a superstar, but he was a very good young player. I don't know too much about kind of those other two prospect-type players, but I'm pretty sure they were included in this deal. They were what the Flames were kind of looking for defensively. And then a first-round pick this year and a conditional third, a fourth round. So they got three picks with those three players too. I'd give the edge to the Flames. You never know. I mean, the Canucks, of course, we all know the season they're having. So I wouldn't say it's a fleece or anything like that, of course, because the Canucks are already basically set right now, and they added still a pretty good piece. But I think it was a pretty good trade for both sides.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think this is a fleece. I think, like you said, I think it'd probably get the Flames the edge. But I do understand why the Canucks made this trade. But if you want to talk about a fleece of a trade, I think this next one, I don't really understand this trade, in my opinion. So the Jets, they get Sean Monahan from the Montreal Canadiens. Now, Sean Monahan this season, 35 points in 49 games played, 13 goals, 22 assists. He's a minus 10. Obviously, he's on the Canadiens, who are a pretty bad team. Cheap contract and what have you. But I just don't know if this is a guy that – first of all, I don't know if this is a guy that's going to put a team over the edge. So the Canucks getting a guy like Elias Lindholm, they already have so many other offensive options that he doesn't have to be that guy. But when you look at the Jets, obviously Mark Scheifele's still on IR. They need guys to pick up the load. When you look at their team, Morris, I think, is a great defense, but Ehlers, Perfetti, Connor, Niederreiter, Nemestikov are their top forwards. So, I guess they were kind of desperate to get another guy in there. I don't know if Sean Monahan really moves the needle for the Jets, though. And more importantly than that, I don't know about giving up a first-round pick for him. I think, we've seen the past few years that teams have given up less than first-round picks for, in my opinion, better players than Sean Monahan. I'm not saying he's bad. I think he's a decent player. I think it's a bit of a massive overspend. I think for a team like Montreal, yes, I know once again that it's a late first-round pick because the Jets probably going to make the playoffs. Granted, they have slipped. I know you mentioned this, I think, last show, Brady. Jets were originally one of the best teams in the league. Now they're third in their division again. It's still a first-round pick. You can still get plenty of good players in the 20s in the first round. So I think for Montreal, I think it's worked out really well for them. Not 100% sure what the Jets are doing with this, in my opinion. I think it's a little desperate. I know – so there's a couple Rangers fans I know who, have their podcasting pages. And Sean Monahan was actually a guy that was linked to him. And they were saying, when they saw his trade, oh, thank God we didn't do that. We really dodged a bullet pretty much. So, that's a team whose fans are linked to this guy. So, clearly, what were your thoughts when you saw this one?
Well, if the Rangers made this trade, I wish they would have based on that. But, I felt even when he was with Calgary, Sean Monahan was a fairly underrated player. And he's by no stretch bad, but
– yeah.
And it doesn't help his case that he was on the Canadiens, but a first round and a conditional third, especially the first round for a team that once again has slipped off a little bit, but still right in the playoff mix. I can understand, of course, as you mentioned, I think you really said it great. They could definitely shore up their firepower a little bit, especially offensively. But and he should help to some extent with that, but I don't know if it was really that much at the risk of their future to the extent that they went to get him. But of course, I wish they made this trade a week ago because he scored two goals against us, including a game winner late that took at least a point away from us. And of course, he gets traded immediately after. But I think the Canadiens overall won this trade. Now, I mean, it's like a borderline fleece, but I can kind of see like him fitting in pretty well with the Jets. But at the same time, I'm not really too sure what was going through their minds when kind of giving up the first and conditional third for him.
You know, Brady, a useful stat I just realized that I didn't realize until now. The four teams involved in both those trades you just mentioned, all Canadian teams, which is, bit strange. Bit of a coincidence, but there you go. But yeah, Sean Monahan headed the Jets. Canadians getting some solid picks back. So, I mean, we'll see what they do with those. They definitely need the help. Now, another firing. This one happened just today. We were talking about this a little bit earlier. Todd McClellan, he's been around, the block a while. Kings head coach, he got dumped today. 3-7-5 January for the Kings. They were pretty comfortably in a divisional playoff spot for, most of the season at this point. But, with that run by the Oilers that we just mentioned, and, obviously the Canucks and Knights have been consistent all season. They're now down to fourth in the Pacific. Now, if you look at the Western Conference standings, they are still in that first wild card spot, 2 points ahead of the Predators and Blues, who are tied at 54 points. But, they made a bit of a potentially risky call to fire their head coach at this point. Jim Hiller, who has been an assistant coach for them, I want to say since 2022, was promoted. He was named interim head coach. I do think it's a bit strange timing. Like, obviously, don't get me wrong, I know the Kings have been on a terrible run. But, I mean, they still have a 23-15-10 record. They're still in a playoff spot. If we look at their statistics, they're 16th in goals for, but they're 7th in goals against. Their special teams is really good. They have a 21% power play, 87% penalty kill, which is incredible. They don't have the flashy players. Like, their top scorers are Kempe and Fiala, tied with 43 points in 48 games played. But they still got Kopitar, who's pretty good. I really like Quinton Byfield. I think he's starting to come into his own, former number 2 overall pick. Drew Doughty's still there doing his thing. And then in net, I think Cam Talbot and David Rittich have actually, been pretty surprising. So I was a little surprised to see that he got fired. I guess they just want to do it now while they're on a cold streak. Get a guy in to kind of get him going again. I do think they have good talent. I do think they're a playoff team. I think they have a pretty solid young core coming up to kind of replace their aging veterans. I think they'll be around in that Pacific Division for years to come. But I'm not too sure how I feel about this one, Brady. What were your thoughts when you saw this move?
Yeah, I'm a little puzzled by the timing of it all. I know, sometimes these firings, when the team is struggling this bad, can kind of flip the switch. But like you said, they're still in the playoff. The Oilers have been on a tear. They're still 3 points behind them for that third spot. So it's not like they've completely even fallen out of that quite yet. Although if the Oilers continue their trend and maybe the Kings kind of stay, borderline 500, they might not be able to catch them. But, it was a pretty horrific stretch they went on. I remember when they were, I feel like, one of the not enough talked about teams where they were having a pretty darn good start. Not maybe one of the top teams, but I feel like they weren't, quite – getting maybe the respect they deserved from the media and all that. Especially they had like all those crazy records on the road early on this season, and they've kind of collapsed to some extent, but they're still right there. And Tom McClellan, as you mentioned, he's been around for a bit. He's been with a few different teams. I think he's a pretty good coach. I mean, of course, he might've gotten a little bit on the hot seat with that run, but I don't know if it was quite time to really let him go. I mean, maybe towards the end of the season, or if this skid continued basically for the next month or so and they were kind of dropping out of it, like maybe a last-ditch effort. But I feel like it was maybe a little too early But we'll see. Like I said, some of those firings can really turn the locker room around and fire a team up. So it doesn't maybe pay off every time like that, but Jim Hiller now stepping up, we'll see if he could kind of right the ship with them a little bit. But kind of a surprising stretch for the Kings. Like you said, maybe not the flashiest team with the superstars and all that, but a pretty well-built team with some very solid players, and they're kind of hitting their skid at the same time another team has skyrocketed. And I guess that might have been something they took into account, but I'm not quite sure that the firing was warranted at this time, I guess.
Yeah, part of me kind of wonders. I mean, maybe they were looking at his playoff resume, obviously in combination with skid. I also think it might be something behind the scenes that we might not know about. But he has not reached a conference finals since the 2010-11 season when he was with the Sharks. Maybe that played a factor. But, I mean, like you said, I mean, this is a guy that just last season, Brady, they got 104 points. They've lost in the first round the last years, but they're also playing the Oilers, who obviously are very loaded with talent. They pretty much improved their season pretty much every year, and, you know, they weren't terrible this season. So, like you said, he has been around the block for a while. I was a little surprised. I hope Jim Hiller does not fall flat on his face. I'll say that, because if they go on another massive skid without their coach, I think they could definitely be – the management could be under fire a bit for making this decision. But we'll see how it works out. I still think they have talent, so I do think they can keep winning games. And like you said, they're not even that far behind the Oilers, because Oilers, yes, they've been great lately, but they had such a terrible start that they really needed to have a run like that to get back in contention for a divisional playoff spot. So we'll see how that goes for them. But yeah, that just happened today. Now, more breaking news today. Like we said, there was just breaking news after breaking news today, man. I will say it was all positive news for hockey fans. So we'll start with this one first. This is incredible news. Now, I was really not expecting this to happen, but it did. So for the first time since 2014, which I remember the Olympics very well. Unfortunately for us Americans, it did not go very well because the damn Canadians, as always, get in the way. But NHL players returning to the Olympics in 2026. This is great news. I know there was, you know, for a long time, Brady, and, you know, obviously I'm a history major guy, so I once did like a research project on the whole Olympics. There was this drive for a very long time in the Olympics to keep professional athletes out of it, to just have it be an amateur competition, make it a more pure sport, if you will. That's the kind of logic that they used with it. And, you know, we've had, you know, professional players in the hockey Olympics for a long time, but it wasn't always that way. You know, you think about the Miracle on Ice back in 1980. You know, the Soviets, yes, they had a professional team, but the Americans, I mean, they just had a group of college kids pretty much that ended up winning that gold medal. Also, fun fact, a lot of people don't know this. That Soviet game was not the gold medal game. It was actually the game before it. And then the U.S. had to play another game to win that. Yep. But, and, you know, like I said, they last played the Olympics 2014. You know, it's been 10 years since then, but they finally made agreement to return to the NHL, or excuse me, return to the Olympics, which I think is great. But not just that, Brady. We also had some other international news, which I don't know how this is going to work out, but it's pretty interesting. And it's this in-season tournament thing that they're considering might actually replace the All-Star game. Now, I got a quote about this from, I believe this is from ESPN. In addition to the Olympics, the NHL and NHLPA have decided to hold a, quote, Four Nations Face-Off, a four-team tournament in February 2025. Obviously, consider the timing, early February, All-Star break, which is happening right now, featuring teams representing the U.S., Canada, Sweden, and Finland, four of the biggest, if not the four biggest, hockey countries in the world, with a international in-season tournament. So I think with that timing, it sounds like it's going to be a pretty big tournament. I would definitely expect it would, if it didn't replace All-Star game, it would really heavily affect it, because those are massive hockey countries. But that's another thing as well. So, Brady, breaking news, surprise, surprise. What were your thoughts on, first, the news that the NHL is coming back to the Olympics in 2026, and then your thoughts on this Four Nations Face-Off tournament?
Yeah, I was very happy to hear both things, I guess, especially the Olympics. I'm not going to lie. After 2014, the last few I didn't really, I guess, enjoy it as much. And that's, of course, no offense to the guys that participated in it. You know, you recognize some of the names and all that, and it's pretty cool. But, I mean, the Olympics is also supposed to be the best of the best. So, especially the, you know, the best nations at hockey, usually their best players are from the NHL. And I remember, you know, 2014, 2010, we don't have to talk about how that one ended either. But, you know, even the last few before that, having the NHL players, I feel like brought an extra element to it, especially for us fans, because we knew basically every player on at least the top countries. And it made things very exciting for us, you know, watching some of our favorite players in the NHL play for their countries, and of course creates, I guess, a little bit of the rivalry amongst the top teams, and even some other nations now emerging with some real star power on their teams as well. You know, Czechia, some of the other European teams have some really good teams now. Sweden and Finland are some of the top nations really now, right there with US, Canada, Russia. So yeah, I'm very excited for that. I guess the one drawback always is, you know, especially since it's in the middle of the season, the risk of, I guess, injuries in the Olympics for the rest of the NHL season. We have seen that, you know, show up a few times, but overall, I think it's a victory for the NHL and the Olympics. And this new tournament is very interesting. It kind of feels like the World Cup of Hockey, just with really only of arguably the top four teams. I mean, in a way, it's kind of annoying to, you know, leave some of the other countries out, because Russia has so many great players. Like I said, you know, even some like Czechia and Switzerland have some pretty good players. Now, I think the top four might be like the top four still. So you might see some of the other nations kind of fall short, and we might see that in the Olympics as well. But I think it's great, especially since I believe they're having two sites here, one in like Canada, one in the US. So it's going to be pretty cool to see all those four teams. And of course, it sounds like, I mean, we kind of expected this, but we're going to have, I think they announced at least like two World Cup of Hockeys coming up within the next decade too, which is basically the Olympics without it technically being the Olympics. But of course, all those nations coming together to play again. And yeah, I think, though, we were talking about the Canadians, I think US, I feel like they have a lot of young talent now, the Hughes brothers and all that. Honestly, it's weird to say, but I think the Canadians might have arguably the worst goaltending out of some of the top teams. You know, of course, Russia, we all know the goalies they got, but the Canadians have like Aiden Hill and Tristan Jarry, no offense to them as well. I think Connor Ingram was, someone made like projected rosters, but I thought that was interesting. But yeah, Sweden and Finland catching up too. I mean, they've always been pretty good, but they're kind of right there now. So I'm really excited for all these. I guess, unfortunately, it's, you know, a few years down the line, or this tournament's next year, but I'm really excited for all this as well. I feel like they kind of took a page out of the NBA's book with, of course, their in-season tournament now implementing this, of course, a little bit different, but I'm really excited for all this international play now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's great. I love international hockey. Now, we'll say this, man. As Americans, we've actually been winning lately in international hockey. We had the IIHF World Juniors about a month ago in Sweden, which we ended up winning. And then last year, we won the World Under 18s back in, I want to say, April 2023 as well. So we've been doing pretty well lately. You know, Ice Hockey World Championships as well. I don't know when those happen, but I know that's another one. Well, there's so many different tournaments now, obviously, going back to the Olympics and now this Four Nations face up. Now, I completely agree. I do want to see them expand this at some point if they can. Maybe add two more countries or something like that. Maybe, you know, do kind of like a round robin format like the Memorial Cup does in the CHL, something like that. I think could be interesting. I want to see what the scheduling for this is like, because a tournament like this with at least four teams, it's going to take a bit. It's going to take more than, you know, a 3-day All-Star break. That's for sure. So I want to see how this would affect the NHL schedule. I do think it's a great idea. Now, when I heard in-season tournament, my first thought was it was going to be something like the NBA did this season, where it was like NHL teams playing NHL in-season tournament, which this isn't a basketball show, but I will say this. When I first heard the idea of the NBA in-season tournament, I thought it was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard in my life. Yeah. But then I actually saw it, and I was like, hold on a second. These are still regular season games, but people are actually trying now. They actually want to win this. Now, granted, I did think it was a bit stupid when the Lakers won it. They celebrated like they won an actual title. But I actually thought it was much better than I thought it would be. I thought it was pretty interesting. And I think this will be very interesting. And like you said, I hope it, you know, it doesn't lead to injuries or something like that. I mean, obviously, that's something that could happen at any point, even an All-Star game if you're very unlucky. But that is a big drawback. Sam and Tom from Big Blue Avenue, go Giants. I know Brady will love that. I'm not a Giants fan, but we did just hire Raheem Morris. And we got Zach Robinson as OC, which I absolutely love. I think that's a great move. But, you know, the Falcons will probably find a way to Falcon it up. They'll probably take J.J. McCarthy at number 8 or something like that, which would make me very sad. But, you know, we'll see what happens. But great news for hockey fans, NHL fans, international hockey fans. They just decided to gift us everything today, man. I don't know. It was just like 1 p.m. rolled around. You're like, yeah, you know what? Let's just announce all this great news for everybody. So fantastic time to be a hockey fan, man. And like I said, as Americans, we've been winning lately with the Young Bucks. With the actual professional teams, it's been a little bit tougher for us because, like you said, the freaking Canadians, man. But maybe we'll overtake them at some point. You never know. But last topic of the night, obviously, our favorite segment of the show. We have our teams of the week. We actually got these done pretty quickly last night. And I will say this. I don't know if Brady will agree with me on this one. In my opinion, this was one of the easiest teams of the week of the season so far. I thought there were some really, really good standouts this week. So, Brady, as always, I'll go ahead and put yours up first. Let me go ahead and remove this real quick. So, you got Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid, the two Oilers guys, Troy Terry of the Anaheim Ducks, a very solid goal scorer, even though the rest of his team is not very good. Roman Josi, Thomas Hartley. Now, I get a lot to say about this guy when I do mine. This guy is just, he's special, man. Alex Lyon in net as well for the Detroit Red Wings. I know he was on a couple teams of the week for us last year. Granted, he was with the Panthers at that point. And honorable mentions, Nikita Kucherov, David Pastrnak. Talk about two crazy honorable mentions right there. And then Joey Dackard as well. So, Brady, take it away. Your team of the week.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting week because really after like Saturday, Sunday too, there was like one or two games on the night. A bunch of teams kind of got on their All-Star break a bit early. But yeah, I mean, some of these were fairly easy, like you said. So I went with kind of two of the more obvious guys, the 1-2 punch. I'll start with McDavid, I guess. 7 points, just another casual 7-point week for McDavid. 3 goals, 4 assists. Both him and Draisaitl +4. He had a power play goal, a game-winning goal. 3.5 points per game throughout the week. Once again, very casual. He put up 4 hits and 2 block shots. So, you know, we all know him as an offensive guy, but he, especially lately throughout this run, he kind of has played more of the 200-foot game. And about 67% in the faceoff dot. McDavid, pretty good centerman, but, you know, that's one of the few things, I guess, where he's, you know, a tier or so below some of the top guys in that category in the league. But just another casual great week for him. Draisaitl as well, 6 points, as I mentioned, +4. He also had a power play goal, game winning goal. His stats are very similar to McDavid's. Points per game the same. He only took, this was an interesting stat, so he only took 1 shot. I don't know if I misread that when I was going through the statistics. He only took 1 shot and he had 1 goal, so I think that's very impressive. I don't know why. I kind of like took my notes on it. 31% face off. That's not that great, but overall, just another pretty good week, at least on the offensive side of things as well, once again, for Leon Draisaitl. My other forward, this is where it kind of got a little tough, I guess. As you mentioned, I put Kucherov and Pasternak in honorable mentions, but I figured I'd give a shout-out to Troy Terry and put him kind of on the top here. Especially, I feel bad for him since he's on the Anaheim Ducks, and it's really him. You know, maybe you got Zegras, although he hasn't been maybe quite the superstar of this season that they were hoping for, although, once again, he's on the Ducks. But Troy Terry has had a decent season so far, and he had a pretty good week. He had 4 goals, 1 assist. He was a +4 as well, had a game winner. He took 11 shots, too. He scored on 4 of them. That's pretty good. And the same as McDavid, 67% in the faceoff dot. So overall, a solid week for a guy who otherwise might not have that because he doesn't have a whole lot around him. And I don't care who you are, that's very impressive to put up those numbers on the Anaheim Ducks. So wanted to give Troy Terry a shout out. Defensively, Roman Josi, I feel like he's been on my list a few times here throughout these few episodes. A goal, 4 assists, 5 points. He was only a +2, but I decided I'd look at the ice time as well. So just under 27 minutes throughout the week. Of course, one of the top defensemen in the league. He did have a game winner, though. Took 10 total shots. I thought that was fairly high for a defenseman in the week. Did, of course, score on them. 10 block shots as well. So, of course, he's doing it down the other end, as he should be, based on his position. And for a Predators team that's kind of in that wild card mix, you know, maybe towards the borderline of that third spot in the Central, kind of, I'm looking at the standings now. They're more in the wild card mix, but they're hanging around there, and Roman Josi, of course, a huge part in that, playing the full 200 feet. And then, as we mentioned a few moments ago, Thomas Harley, he's always kind of looked pretty good with the Stars throughout his young career, but this past week, it was really something else for him. 3 goals and assist. He was +5, and he really played a huge role this week, getting the Stars back up right near the top of their division. They're now just 1 point behind the Avalanche for first in the Central. 22 and a half minutes of time on ice, 2 game winners, both overtime game winners. So he played a huge part as a defenseman in overtime as well. I remember, I think I saw one of the clips. He basically went coast to coast off one of the faceoffs. So a very impressive week, took 9 shots. Only had a hit and 2 block shots, but he more than made up for it offensively. And not that it was bad defensively, of course, but just another great week for Thomas Harley. And we haven't quite put him up there just yet, but this week definitely stood out. So I decided to give him a shout out there. And then Alex Lyon, I was actually putting Joey Decord in kind of this initial top spot. And then I looked at Alex Lyon's stats, and I wanted to give the nod to him. 3 games played, 2-0-1, 941 save percentage, 165 goals against. He made 80 saves, only 5 goals allowed. Of course, that's a total of 85 shots. He did have a shutout as well. And the Red Wings were one of those teams that played another game or two the last few days before the All-Star break, where a lot of teams didn't. They were able to get a point or two on the Islanders and Penguins and all those teams to, unfortunately, pull themselves a little bit further ahead. But Alex Lyon played in all 3 of those games throughout the week, and overall some pretty solid statistics. And then honorable mentions, like we were saying, a bit of a surprise. They could have very easily been up there as well. David Pasternak, 3 goals, 2 assists, a +5 as well, a power play goal, 2.5 points per game this week. Took a total of 10 shots, 4 hits, 2 block shots. So he was all over the ice, played well on the defensive end as well, and a 50% on the faceoff dot. So not the greatest, but obviously still very decent as well, and the Bruins still holding on to that top spot in the Atlantic. Nikita Kucherov, we talked a little bit about him and the now, I guess, surging lightning, even though it almost feels like they're surging in quicksand because they got the other two teams right with them. But he had a goal and four assists, plus four. Also 2.5 points per game. Took 11 shots. Only one goal, but with Nikita Kucherov's shot, I guess that's a little surprising. Late two hits as well, but another impressive borderline honorable mention performance from Nikita Kucherov, who will be right in the running, I'm sure, for the Hart Trophy throughout the week. And then for my goalie, Joey DeCore, 3 games played, 1-1-1, 901 save percentage, 231 goals allowed, 64 saves, 7 goals allowed for a total of 71 shots on goal. Might not be the most impressive stats from a goalie, but we, of course, talked a little bit about what he did in the Winter Classic game. And for a Kraken team that's kind of been struggling a little bit as of late, I figured I'd give him a ton of respect because the Kraken have, you know, kind of been a bit mid this year, but especially the last month or so, he's kind of been keeping them in a lot of games and kind of keeping them afloat somewhat in the playoff race here. They're still only 2 games back, really, of the Blues for that second spot. Everyone's tight there, though, and I thought he had a pretty good week, like I said, kind of keeping the Kraken right into things. So I gave him an honorable mention as well.
Yeah, no, really solid team this week. Definitely all the guys you just mentioned were in contention or made my list. The fours are really tough. I mean, like you said, Kucherov and Pastrnak, as honorable mentions, it's a tough call. But, I mean, Troy Terry did have a really good week, especially on a team that's struggling. I've always been a big fan of his game. I think he's a little bit undershadowed, not only because of the team he plays on, but they have so much young talent on the team, Jonathan Zegras. They also have McTavish, Carlson, guys like that. So, you know, I have been really impressed with him lately. But as for my team of the week, there is some similarity. There are some differences. So I'll go ahead and put mine up real quick. So I'll start with Connor Draisaitl. I'll start with Leon Draisaitl, who, you know, both these guys only played 2 games because, like you said, you know, before the All-Star game, not a lot of teams playing as much. But in those 2 games, he had 6 points, 1 goal, 1 5 assists, which was the 5 assists was tied for the most for forwards this week with William Eklund of the San Jose Sharks, funny enough. He was a plus four. He had 2 game-winning points, 1 goal, and 1 assist. And both he and McDavid did tons of damage on the power play, 3 power play points for each. And like you said, bit of a weird stat. He only shot once and he scored it. So there you go. Definitely, you know, was focused on dishing the puck a lot the past couple games. He also had 1 block shot as well. So there you go. Connor McDavid, 7 points, which was week leading for all players in the NHL. 3 goals and 4 assists in only 2 games played. He was a plus four. He also had 1 game-winning goal and 1 game-winning assist. So these guys were just, you know, pretty much doing it all this week. 25% shooting percentage. And you know what? Like you said, for a guy that's not known for his defense, he added 4 hits and 2 block shots. And he only took 9 faceoffs this week, which for a center seems very low. But he did win 6 of them. So 67% winning percentage for him. Incredible week. Kind of what we've come to expect for him. But because, you know, Kucherov and McKinnon have been so great this season, he's kind of flown under the radar a little bit, which is crazy because, like I said earlier in the show, he's still on pace for 130 points this season. These guys are phenomenal. You know, in my opinion, the best 1-2 punch forward-wise in the league, and obviously a big part of the reason that these guys have gone on that incredible run they have lately. David Pastrnak, who last season, because of said Connor McDavid, had probably one of the quietest 60-goal seasons we have ever seen, has been just as remarkable this season, in my opinion. 3 goals and 2 assists this week for 5 points. He was a plus 5 on the week, which was tied for the weekly lead for forwards with his teammate, Pavel Zhaka. 4 of his 5 points at even strength, 30% shooting percentage, 3 goals on 10 shots. He also added 4 hits and 1 block shot. And the main reason I gave him the edge over Kucherov, I think both these guys had similar stats. I just gave it to Pastrnak because he did these stats in less minutes per game. He had 17 minutes per game, whereas Kucherov was at 22.55. So that's the main reason I gave him the edge over Kucherov this week. But they were very close, and both these guys are having ridiculous seasons. Defensive-wise, another player that I think has been a big part of the reason that the Lightning have turned around lately is Victor Hedman. You know, I know people have – he's kind of flown under the radar a bit lately because of, he's getting on up there in age, you know, some, you know, young emerging defenseman. He's not quite, you know, that leading name in defenseman that he used to be. But this guy's still very good, man. I mean, he's just getting it done all season. And this week he had 4 points, which were all assists. In only 2 games played, he was a +3. All of his points were at even strength. And you know what? What he always likes to do, he hits a lot and he blocks shots. He added 6 hits and 2 block shots. Great week for him. But Thomas Harvey, I got a lot to say about this guy, man. I love this man. He is just – he's a really exciting player to watch. He's a bit of a weird player, though, for a defenseman. He's actually a goal-scoring defenseman, which you don't see a lot of. But this week he had 4 points, 3 goals, which was tied for defenseman-wise with Mark-Edward Vlasic, of all people, for the weekly lead for defenseman. Added 1 assist. He was a +5, which was tied for the weekly lead for defenseman. With Bruins defenseman Hampus Lindholm. And like you mentioned, Brady, 2 of his 3 goals this week were game-winning goals, both of which were in overtime, one against the Ducks and 1 against the Caps. And on the season, some interesting stats. So I think he has 40-something-ish games played. I didn't actually mark down his games played for the season. But he has 12 goals and 29 points. So this guy could potentially have 20 to 25 goals as a defenseman. He's still only 22 as well. So, I mean, he's only going to get better from here on out. This Dallas team has some really good young talent, and Thomas Harley is kind of starting to get that increased role on the team as one of their top defensemen. So I've been really impressed in this season, and he had a great week, 33.3% shooting percentage. And you know what? Screw it. Just add 1 hit and 2 block shots as well. Really impressive week in my opinion for Thomas Harley. And the goalie wise, like you said, a lot of teams, you know, didn't play as many games. This was really evident at the goalie position, where a lot of goalies only played 1 game the entire week. But Alex Lyon, like you said, actually did play 3 games over the past week, and he was really good. He had a .941 save percentage, a 1.65 goals against average, and 1 shutout. So, you know, he's been doing a really good job for a surging Red Wings team that has, you know, put themselves in a really solid position in playoff contention when some people probably didn't see that in preseason. But, in a very competitive Atlantic, they're in great position. They're only 1 point behind the Lightning for third in the division. And they're a very young team as well, probably only going to get better. So looking really good for them right now. Honorable mentions, like I said, Kucherov, he's been amazing all season. Could very well win the Hart. It's probably going to be either him or MacKinnon unless something drastically changes. Just barely gave Pastrnak the edge over him. Roman Josi, another guy who had a really good week, and you went over that very eloquently, but I ended up giving very slight edge to Hedman and Harley this week. And then goalie-wise, I thought Jacob Markstrom had a good week. I think Dackard was another good honorable mention, as you mentioned as well. Weren't a lot of great choices for goalie because a lot of them barely even played. But I think Markstrom, you know, on team has not been very good this season. I think he's definitely been one of their best players. So that is my team of the week as well. And that is going to do it for another episode of Pucking Around. We managed to go through a lot of content in only, you know, around 80-ish minutes or so. Tom says, McDavid finds his way on these graphics every week. He's been the best player in the league for a while now. Yeah, he has. He's ridiculous, man. But that's all we got. We went through a ton of content in a short amount of time. Brady, do you have anything you want to say real quick here before we kind of wrap it up for the night?
Not much, really. Excited, I guess, to get out of this All-Star break here. This is, I don't know if I want to quite say the final stretch, because we still got a few months left, of course, but, you know, trade deadline coming up in a month or so, it changes every year, but so we'll definitely have a lot of that to talk about, I'm sure, on the next few episodes. And the playoff push, the wild cards are fairly tight. I know the Wings, like we said, separated themselves a little bit, but I'm sure, you know, in the end, it'll be fairly tight. And even the top three division spots in almost every division are really tight between the three. And you got, of course, those 4 and 5 teams right behind them as well. So I'm really excited to see where this all goes. I'm sure next episode, the standings will look fairly different. And we'll see. We'll probably have, you know, a bunch of standing changes and a bunch of breaking news like a day or two before our next show. But no, I'm really excited to see where the standings and the league and all that goes from here.
Yeah, man, it's been up and down season. We're going to have a lot to talk about because, like you said, trade deadline is coming up fast approaching. Trades are going to start ramping up. We'll probably have to get to the point where we can talk about nothing but trades because there's gonna be trades, you know, coming left, right, and center. Teams selling, teams buying, teams trying to get anything they can, offloading expiring contracts, getting prospects, what have you. There's gonna be a lot going on. But you know, until then, another great show. Always a pleasure to talk hockey with you, Brady. And for everyone that was watching, appreciate all the comments, appreciate all the likes on the show. I know Friday night is not an ideal slot, especially with NHL All-Stars skills competitions going on right now. But you guys killed it, so we appreciate that a lot. We'll be back to hopefully a more regular slot of the week next time. You know, stuff happens in real life and you got to adjust. But we put on a good show, talked about a lot in, you know, a pretty decent amount of time. Didn't feel too long, at least to me. So until next stream, from myself, Noah Dog Dibbler, and my co-host and good buddy, Brady Campbell, this has been another episode of Pucking Around on the Reading Preview Sports Network. Enjoy the All-Star break. Stay safe. Hope you're ready for some international hockey to come back. And keep pucking around. We'll see you next time.